It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. Are we or are we not in a recession? That question comes as new economic numbers go public this week. They could provide a clearer picture as to the real state of our economy. Already, the White House in spin mode.
You're saying that's not a recession?
It's not the technical definition.
In terms of the technical definition, it's not a recession.
That is not the actual definition of a recession.
The Biden administration take on what recession means has members of the media scratching their heads.
Two contracting quarters means that the economy's in a recession. You're going to still argue that we're not in a recession?
Kentucky Congressman James Comer.
The Biden plan to avoid recession is to change the definition of recession. Ever since I've been an economics major at Western Kentucky University in the mid-90s, the definition of recession was two negative quarters of GDP, and that's what we're going to have.
NBC's Tom Costello.
This is a head-scratcher of an economy. Never before has the Fed been in an environment where it's trying to fight inflation. Despite very low unemployment, wages keep going up, consumers still spend. In addition, we're coming out of a pandemic with massive amounts of stimulus money to keep the economy from going into a depression. So this is a very, very unusual predicament for the Fed right now.
Consumer confidence slid for the third straight month today. Tomorrow, the Fed expected to raise interest rates in order to tap the brakes on inflation. And on Thursday, we'll get that much-coveted GDP report. Economists say the gross domestic product is the best barometer for measuring how the economy is really doing. Containing the flames. That's our other big story today.
We're making some really good progress on this fire.
In the fight against the fires near Yosemite National Park, firefighters are gaining ground. They're starting to get containment in Northern California, where that giant oak fire has charred nearly 20,000 acres. That's the good news. Here's the bad.
It's supposed to stay hot and dry, and unfortunately, I think that's what we're going to be looking at for a little while here.
Cal Fire's Kevin Sweeney says more than 50 homes have been lost to the flames near Yosemite. 20 homes in suburban Dallas were damaged yesterday in a fast-moving grass fire that was sparked by a lawnmower blade that hit an object on the ground. Underwater in St. Louis, that city got 10 inches of rain in a matter of hours this morning. The National Weather Service issuing a life-threatening flash flood emergency. Meteorologist Michelle Grossman.
We're seeing submerged cars. So when you have flash flooding, it's a very dangerous situation. That's where most deaths occur when it comes to weather.
Today's deluge breaks a 150-year record for the wettest day ever in St. Louis. North of the border, Pope Francis has apologized to the indigenous people of Canada.
I humbly beg forgiveness for the evil committed by so many Christians against the indigenous peoples.
Back in the 19th and 20th centuries, the Catholic Church forced the conversions of 150,000 indigenous children in Canada. This is the first papal visit to Canada since 2002. Donald Trump returns to Washington today for the first time since the end of his presidency 18 months ago, the nation's 45th president delivering the keynote address at the America First Agenda Summit. Trump will talk about public safety, lowering energy prices, combating the border crisis, and giving parents more of a say when it comes to their children's education. Former Vice President Mike Pence is pushing to protect life in all 50 states. He said today about the recent Supreme Court ruling on abortion.
Sent Roe versus Wade to the ash heap of history where it belongs.
Pence is said to be actively planning his own presidential run in 2024. Indiana Republicans advancing a bill that would ban most abortions. Pro-choice demonstrators gathered in protest yesterday at the state capitol.
It's not a man's choice. It's not the government's choice. It's not your church's choice. It's a woman's choice.
Pro-life lawmaker Ken Stiles.
Indiana has this opportunity to end abortion, and we need to take advantage of it. And
abortion, period.
Indiana is the first state since the overturning of Roe to hold a special legislative session aimed solely at making most abortions illegal. We're coming up on 5 past the hour and still to come on the Noon Report, honoring a fallen police officer. Prison guards in short supply and nicks the nap. Brandon Dixon will tell us why after this.
Good afternoon. We're looking at a most comfortable afternoon across the area. Low humidities have returned. Looks like a pleasant stretch that'll carry us into tomorrow. I'll be back with forecast details coming up in 10.
All right, Kevin Williams, we will see you then. Let's check the stories making news across New York and Pennsylvania now. The Rochester cop who was shot to death as he sat in his unmarked car last week will be eulogized at noon next Monday at the Blue Cross Arena. 56-year-old Tony Mazurkiewicz was a 29-year veteran of the force in his hometown of Parenton. Neighbors are displaying blue ribbons and blue lights to show their respect for that fallen cop.
We would like to just light the neighborhood up blue as possible.
Gene Gurin lives next door to the Mazurkiewicz.
It's a deep hurt. There's a lot of pain there, but there is also a lot of love and support on top of that as well.
Mazurkiewicz leaves behind a wife, 4 children, and 3 grandchildren. The accused cop killer, a 21-year-old from Boston, allegedly fired 17 rounds into the officer's car last Thursday night on Bauman Street in Rochester. Bail reform becoming a big campaign issue in this year's gubernatorial race in New York. Speaking at a police conference today in Glens Falls, Governor Hochul said changes have been made to the state's controversial bail reform law. Hochul says those changes include
more opportunities to have arrests for repeat offenders and gun violence cases and hate crimes. All of those are now covered back under the law that had not been covered before. We also gave more authority for our judges to analyze the severity of an offense when they're making their decisions.
Hochul's opponent, Republican Lee Zeldin, calling for even tougher bail reform laws after he was attacked on stage during a campaign event last week. Electric bills are going up in Pennsylvania starting tomorrow. You will pay more as utilities pass along higher costs onto consumers. The Public Utility Commission says the extra funds are needed because the fuels used to make electricity at power plants have risen in price. Niagara County, New York has its first case of the monkeypox. The infected individual is isolating at home and is said to be no threat to the general public. Dr. John Selleck with Kaleida Health says monkeypox does not spread as easily as COVID-19.
This does not spread easily by respiratory droplets. Most of the spread is by direct contact with either infectious lesions or perhaps with the clothing or towels or bed sheets of someone who has monkeypox.
Nationwide, there are now more than 3,400 confirmed cases of the monkeypox. A third of those are in New York City. Pennsylvania leads the nation when it comes to cases of Lyme disease. That's a tick-borne illness usually seen in the warmer months. Nicole Chinisi is an insect expert at East Stroudsburg University.
We have seen expansion of tick populations, so we're seeing ticks that haven't been common in our state.
She says treatment for tick-borne diseases varies depending on what part of Pennsylvania you come from. The state Senate recently passed a bill to create an electronic database so as to keep better tabs on tick-borne illnesses throughout the Keystone State. New York is spending $70 million to start up child care services in places where it is needed. According to Governor Hochul, 20,000 child care slots were lost during the pandemic. She says many parents live in child care deserts. The funding's designed to help create more than 12,000 new openings for parents in need of child care. Parents in need of diapers are getting some help as well from New York. Family Life's Jeremy Miller has that story.
Governor Hochul signed the Diaper Act into law, exempting diapers for both adults and children from local sales tax. They already are from state sales tax. The tax break is meant to lessen the burden on families amid rising inflation and costs. 5 million children under the age of 3 live in poor and low-income families in New York State. Infants require up to 12 diapers per day. That's up to $80 per month per baby. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf is quietly giving away $40 million to four state-run universities, including the University of Pittsburgh, which is conducting controversial fetal tissue research. Those funds are leftover stimulus money designed to help small businesses struggling to survive during COVID-19. Prison guards are in short supply, and it's causing staffing shortages throughout the Commonwealth.
It's just not on the top 10 I want to work in a correctional facility industry.
Tina Litz is the warden at the Lebanon County Correctional Facility.
Usually these are the jobs that people vie for. There's usually a stack of applications and people want to be involved in this industry.
Litz says the pandemic's put prisons in a tough spot. She adds there's a lot of misperceptions about what a corrections officer is exactly.
People thought that you had to be a weightlifter or some kind of something like that to be a correctional officer, when really a correctional officer, we're asking you to wear many different hats. The most important is that you're able to communicate and de-escalate situations.
Litz says larger salaries are helping some with alleviating the shortage of prison guards. A train derailed yesterday, Yates County, New York. It happened near Himrod. There were no cars involved, just the engine. The operator of that train treated for an arm injury. This week marks a major milestone for five military siblings in western Pennsylvania.
The Peters family from the borough of Northeast of Erie, PA, celebrated their retirement from the military on Sunday. All five brothers and sisters and some of their spouses have served in the military with over 100 years of service between them. The family legacy started when older sister Amy enlisted. She was in the field during the events of September 11, 2001. Younger brother Brandon retires this Friday after more than two decades as an Army combat engineer. The community celebration also said thank you for your service to Jackie, Shane, Catherine, Cassie, and Greg Peters. Greg Gillespie, Family Life News.
All right, thank you, Greg. The Fogelsville, Pennsylvania man whose pet snake wrapped around his neck last week has sadly since died of his injuries. 27-year-old Elliot Sensiman passed away 4 days after being rushed to the hospital. The 15-foot-long pet boa constrictor was shot dead by police. Sensiman had multiple snake enclosures in his home. Nicks the nap. Family Life's Brandon Dixon says you snooze, you lose.
People who nap regularly are at a greater risk of developing high blood pressure and stroke, according to a new report from the American Heart Association. The study shows those who typically napped during the day were 12% more likely to develop high blood pressure over time and 24% more likely to have a stroke compared with those who never napped. Experts say napping itself isn't harmful, but people who take naps may do so due to poor sleep at night. That can be associated with poor health, and naps aren't enough to make up for a lack of a good night's sleep. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
All right, thank you very much, Brandon. It's now 14 past the hour. Midday sports next on the Noon Report.
Good afternoon. I'm Randy Snavely. Bob, we begin in Philadelphia. The Phillies' Bryson Stott had a huge night, driving in five of Philadelphia's six runs, three of which came on an eighth-inning home run to lead the Phillies over the Braves 6-4. Nico Hoerner also came through in the eighth with a go-ahead double for the Chicago Cubs as they edged the Pirates 3-2. Elsewhere in the National League, Cincinnati beat up the Marlins 11-2. The Rockies shut out Milwaukee 2-0. The Giants also whitewashed, falling to Arizona 7-0. And the Nats surprised the Dodgers 4-1. In the American League, it was Baltimore 5, Tampa Bay 1. Boston 1, 3-1 over Cleveland. KC shut out the Angels 7-0. Oakland down Houston 7-5. And Seattle edged Texas 4-3. The one interleague contest saw the Tigers win easily over San Diego by a 12-4 score. Well, the latest edition of the Subway Series begins tonight in Flushing as the Mets will host the Yankees. Taiwan Walker will oppose Jordan Montgomery in the first game of this two-game series. And believe it or not, it is time to talk football. Training camps get underway today for just about every NFL team. The rookies have already arrived, but today is the day for the veterans to show up. So it's time to get down to the serious business of getting ready for the season. The first preseason game, the Hall of Fame game, between the Jags and the Raiders is just a week and a half away. It happens on August 4th in Canton, Ohio. That is a look at sports.
All right, pass the pigskin. Thank you very much, Randy. And still to come on the Noon Report, a local triathlete goes for the gold despite being nearly completely blind. A remarkable story, and you're going to hear it coming up after this.
It is impossible to respect marriage if you don't know what marriage really is in the first place. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. In the 2015 majority opinion in Obergefell v. Hodges, a decision that overruled laws in dozens of states and imposed so-called same-sex marriage on the whole United States, Justice Anthony Kennedy rightly described marriage as an institution that's fundamental to society, that protects and ensures the well-being of children, and that is essential for a flourishing culture. To withhold this institution from same-sex couples, Kennedy then wrongly concluded, would be to violate their dignity and disrespect their autonomy, especially the autonomy reflected in their intimate unions. Now, what went missing in the entire opinion was any definition of what marriage actually is, and therefore why it is such an irreplaceable institution. Instead, Kennedy resorted to identifying marriage as an ever-evolving institution. In other words, marriage isn't baked into reality like gravity. It's more like a speed limit, a social construct that constantly changes as society changes. Throughout human history, marriage has always been understood, including in law, to be a union of sexually complementary human beings and therefore connected to procreation. No-fault divorce, and more fully, same-sex marriage, redefined it as an institution only ordered towards the vagaries of adult happiness. Well, last week, the U.S. House of Representatives proposed the wrongly named Respect for Marriage Act. If the bill then passes the Senate, it would result in a further stage of the legal evolution of marriage. When Obergefell was decided, the T had not yet taken over the ever-growing acronym of sexual identity preferences. The Respect for Marriage Act would encode and further extend the reinvention of marriage and law from the legislative branch. In effect, marriage would be further redefined as a genderless institution, not only unbound from its essential connection to children or sexual distinction, but to any embodied realities whatsoever. In other words, there would be no legal obstacle to extending marriage beyond couples to relationships consisting of multiple partners. Look, children have always been forced to bear the brunt of the worst ideas of the sexual revolution, especially when combined with unbound reproductive technologies. Rather than being the fruit of a loving union, children today are increasingly treated as the products of casually partnered consumers. Further, if the Respect for Marriage Act becomes law, the very worst parts of the Obergefell decision would be established in law in a way that abortion wasn't, even under Roe v. Wade. Like Roe, Obergefell was an act of judicial overreach. As Chief Justice John Roberts wrote in dissent at the time, this court is not a legislature. Under the Constitution, judges have the power to say what the law is, not what it should be. Five lawyers have closed the debate and enacted their own vision of marriage as constitutional law. The majority's decision is an act of will, not legal judgment. In his majority opinion, Justice Kennedy claimed that his decision would not affect people of conscience, especially religious institutions and people. That has proven to be flatly wrong. And the Respect for Marriage Act contains no conscience protections whatsoever. And apparently, despite a party platform which claims a commitment to things like constitutional originalism and religious freedom, it seems quite possible that this bill will find support from 10 Republican senators. If it does, it will pass the Senate and become law. So please, if you live in a state with a Republican senator who has not indicated that he or she will oppose this bill, call them today and tell them to oppose the Respect for Marriage Act. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
We're coming up on 20 past the hour. You know what that means. Kevin Williams time.
Good afternoon. Here is your family life weather forecast. The call for this afternoon, most pleasant sunshine, scattered mixed clouds, comfortable air, low humidity, high temperatures, mid-70s to the mid-80s. Dropping tonight, back to or below 60 for many under starlit skies. Tomorrow, some sunshine, slight chance of a shower, thundershower, some parts of Pennsylvania, high temps into the 80s. Better chance of a shower, thundershower tomorrow night or Thursday, but hit miss. Temperatures on Thursday reaching into the 80s.
All right, Kevin Williams, thank you very much. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm your host, Bob Price. Great to have you with us today. Lots going on this Tuesday, the 26th of July, with consumer confidence down and inflation up. The Federal Reserve is expected to raise interest rates tomorrow. On Thursday, the Commerce Department goes public with new GDP numbers. It's got a lot of folks wondering, are we headed for a recession?
We are in a recession. In the first half of this year, January through the end of June, this economy contracted. Who cares about a technical definition of a recession? We are in a recession, and everybody out there knows it.
Stuart Varney with the Fox Business Channel. Nearly 20,000 acres have been lost to the flames as a devastating wildfire continues to burn near Yosemite National Park in Northern California.
The Oak Fire has many communities facing potential devastation.
This is not normal.
Thousands of residents are under evacuation orders as the fire leaves a trail of destruction, devouring at least 55 structures, while at least 3,200 homes remain under threat.
Correspondent Jonathan Vigliotti, California's canceled state travel to much of the country because of laws in other states that the Golden State views as discriminatory against the LGBTQ community. Correspondent William Lajeunesse.
California is essentially saying there's only one way to think about this issue. Our way.
California's put the kibosh on taxpayer-funded travel to 22 states that do not align with its gay, lesbian, and transgender policies.
This is part of this sort of weird California arrogance, which is increasingly not justified.
Joel Kotkin teaches at Chapman University and says the boycott has backfired on California big time.
This is something that epitomizes and reflects what has become an insane political culture in the state.
California college professors are complaining now that they cannot do research in other states. Athletic recruiters are having to book hotels in other states. Sports teams throughout California now forced to use private funds in order to travel to nearly half of the country. Montgomery County, Maryland schools are banned from disclosing a student's gender identity to their parents if those parents do not support a transition. Parental rights advocate Erica Sanzi.
It is deliberate deception happening on the part of school districts. Since when do we allow children to decide whether or not their parents get to know something?
Montgomery County is the largest school district in the state of Maryland. The entire police force in Kenley, North Carolina has just resigned.
There's a town in America where if you call 911 right now, there's nobody coming to help you.
The police chief and all five deputies quit their posts this week because of the new town manager who's accused of creating a hostile work environment. Legal scholar Theo Terrell.
When the chief turns his letter into the manager, let me translate that. He's unable to do his job.
Reginald Williams lives in Kenley.
And I was like, what in the world, man? I mean, we can't have a lawless town. There's no way on God's green earth we can have a lawless town.
Kenley's a town of about 2,000 residents. Brock Wiley owns a business there.
New town manager has come in and has kind of nitpicked apart the entire town. You know, we're a very small knit community. To see that happen, it's quite shocking.
The town manager was recently let go from a similar post in neighboring South Carolina for micromanaging the police force there. Russia's preparing to go it alone in space.
The head of Moscow's space agency says Russia will leave the International Space Station after 2024. The U.S. and Russia have been working together on the station, which has been in orbit since 1998. But tensions between Russia and the West are high over Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. Space exploration has been one of the few areas where cooperation has continued.
Correspondent Cammy McCormick. It's 24 past the hour, and this is the Noon Report on Family Life. Welcome. Welcome back to another edition of Hometown Heroes on Family Life. I'm your host, Bob Price, and our guest this week is Deborah Chukuski of Corning, New York. This world-class triathlete is going for the gold, despite being almost completely blind. Well, Deborah, people that live in the Elmira Corning area, many of them know your story, but there are several who do not. When you were a teenager, you were diagnosed, and I hope I say this right, correct me if I don't, Stargardt's disease. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, that is correct.
If you would, what is that and how has that impacted your life?
Stargardt's disease affects my central vision. I rely on my peripheral vision to see the world. And you'd be surprised on how much you use your central vision. So I'm not able to drive. And things like facial recognition, I know that it is a person, but I can't tell who it is. Depth perception is very much affected by not having my central vision, which is why I rely on my guide dog to help.
And is this a disease where it gets progressively worse the older you get?
That's correct. It will eventually plateau, but I'm still in this progressive stage.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, despite this diagnosis, you are a world-class athlete. Tell us a little bit about how you're able to compete at such a high level, even while battling this disease.
Because I have no central vision and can't drive, I rely on walking. And when my husband and I moved here, he knew how important it was to me to be able to be physically active. So we purposely picked a house that was within 1 mile of the YMCA, which is what I'm able to utilize for the swimming. And then somebody was able to donate to us a treadmill. So when it starts getting in the fall, when there's leaves and I can't see the ground that well, and especially during the winter, I cannot run outside. So I'm able to run inside on the treadmill and stay safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the biking portion of it, I have a bike on what's called a trainer, and I'm also able to bike inside and stay safe, but still be able to do all of the amount of training that I can do to be able to compete at an elite level.
Yeah. Deborah Chukuski of Corning, New York is this week's hometown hero. And you are a mom of two battling Stargardt's disease. And I know you're a very humble person. You don't like to brag, but you are a world-class triathlete. You've been in competitions all over the world, correct?
Yes. And a lot more to come for the Paralympics in 2024.
And that's going to be in Paris, correct?
Yes, it is.
So how do you get ready for something like that?
So for triathlon specifically, my guide and I, next year from June 2023 to June 2024, we are going to be competing at the world level to get ranked internationally. And if I am ninth or higher in the world, I can earn a spot on Team USA.
Wow.
To go to the Paralympics.
Awesome. Now, this guide is with you when you run, with you when you bike, and with you when you swim, correct?
Yes, that's correct. So when I swim, we have a tether that we attach to our thigh, and we swim tethered together. And then when we get out of the water, we hop on a tandem bicycle, and she is in the front because she has the perfect vision. And then when we get off, we're running together. We have a belt with a tether in between us, so we're about 18 inches apart, and she again communicates with me on the road conditions, and if there's any steps or anything, we're constantly talking to each other.
That is incredible. I've seen you work out at the Y in the morning from time to time, but I cannot imagine it's easy to compete at that kind of a level and in the training and everything that's necessary. And how much training do you actually do, Deborah?
So I'm on a 13-day cycle, so I will do two disciplines, so swimming, biking, running, running, swimming, and then also lifting twice a day for a 13-day cycle, and then I'll take the 14th day off as a rest day.
The grit and the determination that you have, so inspiring. Why were you so determined to not let Stargardt's disease defeat you?
When I was young, athleticism was just something that was gifted to me, and there was a period of time I thought having Stargardt's disease would take away from my life, and it was at the moment when I finally realized that God has put this in my life to have the stage that I now have to glorify him. Yes, I have a disease, but it will not define me. It's just going to be part of my story and part of who I am. What's going to define me is me representing Jesus and representing my community to the best I can. Like, that is going to define who I am.
you know, so many people in life may have felt cheated and that life's not fair or that somehow they were given a bad break. What's your advice to others who feel that way today, Deborah?
The first thing I would do is actually turn around and look back. Look back at all the positive things that have happened. And it's a daily choice to not allow your perspective to change. That gives you that upper hand. It makes you stronger each day. Find one other person or a community that is able to support you. It gives me the strength to keep going.
That is Deborah Chukoski of Corning, New York, an elite athlete who's using her disease to be a witness for Christ on the world stage. Join us next week as we search for your home, your town, your hero. It's Hometown Heroes on Family Life. Hometown Heroes comes your way every Tuesday during the Noon Report or online anytime, familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A cold front across the area yesterday, preceded by the showers and thunderstorms as well south of the region now, generated big rains from the St. Louis area, record rains into parts of the lower Ohio Valley and the deep southeast. But our area is on the dry side now. It looks to stay that way for now. The call for this afternoon, most pleasant sunshine, scattered mixed clouds, comfortable air, low humidity, high temperatures, mid-70s to the mid-80s, dropping tonight back to or below 60 for many under starlit skies. Tomorrow, some sunshine, slight chance of a shower, thunder shower, some parts of Pennsylvania, high temps into the 80s, better chance of a shower, thunder shower tomorrow night or Thursday, but hit miss. Temperatures on Thursday reaching into the 80s.
All right. Thank you very much, Kevin. Finally, Noon, say so long to the Choco Taco. Say it ain't so, Brian Querrey.
People put a lot of different things in tacos. Beef, chicken, ground turkey, and even ice cream. And the chocolate-covered chilled confectionery many have known and loved for 40 years is being discontinued. A representative for Klondike, maker of the Choco Taco, told CNN Business the company has had to make some tough decisions recently and knows the decision may be very disappointing to some. Fans of the frozen favorite took to social media to express their displeasure, with one writing, "Choco Taco has fallen," and another musing, "They always take the best things away from us." As sellers run through their inventory, a very limited number of the tasty treats will be available while supplies last. Brian Querrey, Family Life News.
I feel like we should have a moment of silence here for the Choco Taco. All right, that's enough. That's the world we live in. Tuesday, the 26th of July. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.